You're listening to The Write Process, a podcast in which one writer tells the story of completing one work from concept to completion. I'm your host, Charlie Jensen.
Hi, I'm Julia Camara, and I wrote a movie called Stronghold.
Julia Camara is a Brazilian writer-filmmaker. Born and raised in Sao Paulo, Brazil, she freelanced for years as a Portuguese translator for film and television subtitling. She has written and directed several award-winning short films. Her feature directorial debut, In Transit, an experimental drama shot mostly in one day with improvised dialogue, won Best Experimental Film at four different festivals. Julia also wrote the sci-fi feature Area Q, starring Isaiah Washington, and the road movie Open Road, starring Andy Garcia, Juliette Lewis, and Camilla Bell. Julia teaches screenwriting at UCLA Extension's Writers Program and works as an advisor for Sundance Collab. Stronghold is a feature film about a mother-daughter duo living alone in a post-apocalyptic world. This indie thriller is written and directed by Julia Camara. Written in 2012 before the pandemic, this almost prophetic story captures the feeling of isolation the world felt during the 2020 lockdown.
The inspiration for this film started back in 2012, believe it or not. I had just wrapped a film called Open Road. It started with the character first. The character was a man. So this character has now gone through a gender swap, just in a more recent version. I just started seeing this father living isolated in the woods with a youngish daughter, like a teenage daughter. Just been the two of them for as long as the daughter could remember. And then I started to picture this girl who was hanging on his every word of all the stories he told her, but at the same time, so eager to go out in the world, even though she thinks the world doesn't exist anymore, that everyone's dead and no one's left and it's all devastation and destruction. But she is just so hungry to get out in the world, to see other people, to expand her lifestyle that so far has been just out in the woods with her father surviving. The script has had multiple lives at this point. I was going to get it made back in 2013, and I had a cast and I had a location and I had all these things lined up, and then that didn't work out. Back in my drawer it went, and I worked on other things. I feel like that happened a few times where, like, oh, someone's interested. All right. And we start to develop it again, and I make script changes and we have meetings. And at that point, there was like a director attached, and he had some girls in mind for the lead character. And it was still a father-daughter story back then. That didn't go forward. It's like you do a couple of years of development and notes and meetings and new drafts and contracts, and we're gonna send it out to this person and that person. Oh they passed too, so we don't know. And it gets to a point where, okay, we don't know if we can do anything with this script anymore. So back in my drawer it went a second time. So I had been toying with making this father character a mother for a while, even though this character is very rough, just a survivalist type, a hunter, a gatherer, a fighter. Not until recently have we seen those like survivalist types, right? I feel like there's so many post-apocalyptic shows now where we've seen those rough women who are fighting, like The Last of Us. I'm like, oh, I love it. I love everything they've done on that show. But I feel like for so many years, it's like we're used to seeing the guy, right? The isolated in the woods survivalist dad who just knows about nature and knows how to hunt and can fight someone if he has to. It wasn't until 2020 that I spent a year isolated in my apartment with my daughter, who at the time was 6, and she's now almost 9, that it really started to feel like I was living that story a little bit, where she was eager to get out in the world. I was doing everything that I could to keep her entertained and like in what ended up being like a very small, very contained universe of the places we could go, right? Like very limited amount of things that she could do to entertain herself. I really started to feel like I understood my own story on a whole new level. 2021, I actually sat down and did the rewrite. I feel like everything clicked after that. And it's how the story should have always been. And I'm really glad that it didn't get made those two, three other times when it could have been made. At that point, I attached myself as director. I now got to see exactly the vision that I wanted to see come to life. And it's like no one else's vision. I wrote the first draft very quickly. It was 2012. I did not have a child back then. I had just wrapped a movie. I was doing freelance work. I've always done freelance work as a translator. I had these pockets of time where like, oh, I don't have a project due, so I could sit down and get a ton of writing done. And again, back then, my life was a lot more flexible, so I could just take a week, sit down and write like crazy. I think it took me maybe less than a month to write this first draft. It's one of those scripts where like I did not have an outline when I started writing it, which is, I've done it a few times. I don't do it as often anymore because I do get lost. But with this one, I didn't have an outline. I just had this character in my head and I started to put the story down on paper in like a rough, crazy way. Of course, after that, it was like many rewrites. I love having a first draft that I can then dissect and make changes and move things around and edit. So I think the first draft was actually really short. It was maybe only about 60 pages, but I got to the end of the story. So I had to go back and add more things to it and move things around and really figure out like, okay, so now I know the story. What am I going to do with the story? How can I shape the story? Who are these characters? Can I go deeper? What's the mythology behind, you know, the things that either happen or what's the relationship? I only have three characters. So I think mapping out what everyone's relationship to each other became another thing that really helped me polish the script. It's just really thinking like, how do they all relate? How many scenes did they all have together? It took me a while to really get the choreography of who's coming and going and why. And when these two characters are doing something here, what's the third character doing? Because they're all in kind of in the same location. Once I was done with that draft, which took me about a month, I've revised it so much now that I really don't know how long it took me to do the second draft. It's been more than 10 years, so I don't, I really don't know exactly how long it took me to, you know, I know the first draft was about a month. And at that point, I could have a more flexible writing schedule. Nowadays, my writing schedule is a lot different because I do have a daughter. I teach classes at UCLA and I write articles for a couple of screenwriting blogs online. I do a lot of different freelance things and I have to put everything in my calendar or I forget things. And I have to kind of find the pockets of writing time that I have. So usually when I go to bed every night, I kind of look at my schedule for the next day and I find I have this much time here. So I'm going to do a really quick writing session. But honestly, sometimes I blow it off, if I'm being perfectly honest. The thing is, once I'm working on a project, the longer I step away from the project, the harder it is for me to go back. So I do get into these like must do writing every day until I finish this draft, or I feel like I'm not in the headspace anymore. I'm not thinking about the characters anymore. I don't know what's happening anymore. Editing is easier. I feel like you can come back to it and just dance with the characters a little bit, like see what they're up to and imagine situations for them. Like if the first draft already exists, I feel like I can play more than if I'm creating the story in the first draft. I think it took me another couple of months to do the revisions and feel like this is now a solid draft. My husband used to like read everything I wrote, has not read something I've written in quite a while, but it's fine. I forgive him. We get busy. So I'm pretty sure that I gave him the draft. He read it. He had thoughts. I made changes to it. So I think it was like a couple of months before I'm like, all right, I think this draft is good. And I think I want to go try and make it now. And then at that point, like I had an actress in mind and a location, and like we're doing budget, we're doing all these practical things to try and get the project made. It ended up being that it's just the timing wasn't right. The actress dropped out and we weren't sure if we could get the money together to do it. So it's just like, all right, maybe now is not the right time for this. So we're just going to wait and see what happens. It went back in my drawer. And then I was asked by someone I know and have a good relationship with. She was working at a production company at the time. And she's just like, what scripts do you have? Like, I would love to read you. What do you have? So it was like out of the blue. I didn't go looking for it. It came to me. And I sent her this and a couple other things. I always do that. Whenever I have a chance to submit a script to anyone who maybe just wants to get to know my writing or like, who am I as a writer? I always send that person three options of things to read. So I send like three log lines with, you know, three, like, here's the title, genre, log line. Tell me which one you want to read. And she was kind enough to say, well, they all sound great, but let me start with this one. And then I think she ended up reading some of the other ones too. But then she read Stronghold, which I believe even had a different title back then. So many things have changed. It's possible that it had a different title back then. But she read it and got really excited and took it to her boss. And he got excited. And then we sat down and we had a notes meeting, right? Where they gave me all their feedback. It might have been like maybe another couple of months. I don't know. Maybe I didn't wait that long. I didn't used to wait that long back then. It's possible that I only waited like a couple of weeks and I had a new draft. I had more time and I was a lot more eager to get things done. So it's quite possible that in a couple of weeks I had a new draft for them. And we did that, and that went on for a while, where like we would have a couple of meetings, they would read the new draft, we'd talk about how we want to get this made, and, you know, who are we thinking in terms of casting, and da da da. And we did that like maybe 3-4 times until we got to a draft that everyone liked in the room, which is not the draft that got shot, interestingly enough, but it's close. I feel like each draft got me closer to the draft that was made. I also used to use this script as a writing sample. Anytime somebody would request a writing sample, it was one of the ones that I sent out. I've written new things since, but I feel the loss of that writing sample. Because once your script is made into a movie, you need a new writing sample. You can't use that one anymore. And that makes me sad on so many levels, because I still feel like it was a great script. It was really good. It functioned as a writing sample for me for over a decade. This time around, when I decided that, like, all right, I think now I'm going to do this. I think I submitted to one more person. It's possible I've submitted to everyone I know. I've been trying to get this movie made since that first draft. I've been trying to get it made. So I feel like there's possibly other people that have read it and given me notes, and I've made changes based on their notes. Once this version with the father turned into a mother came out in 2021, I made a lot of changes to that too. I feel like some of the changes were just practical in terms of, would a woman say this? Some of the changes were more, I think I wanted to, you know, it was then post-pandemic, because there is a post-apocalyptic theme to the story where, you know, everyone's dead. It's just these two characters left. And then there is a virus, like all these things existed pre-pandemic in the story. But then post-pandemic, I felt like I had a lot more to say about that. So I made changes then based on what I had experienced. But it was weird to touch that script after so many years of kind of not looking at it. And then having yet lived through a pandemic, it made me feel like, oh, did I predict this? Did I create this pandemic by writing this thing? But now I'm like, I'm a mother. I'm writing about a mother. I feel like the daughter's voice changed a lot because of someone who is raising a girl who's not quite the age of the girl in the movie. But I think that gave me like a brand new perspective into these relationships and the things that a mother would say to a young daughter. And the more I think about it, I'm like, yeah, I think the character's voice was always there, the parent. But it definitely changed having, going from a father to a mother, and me going from a woman with no child to a mother. I feel like a lot of the story has evolved, and part of me thinks it should have taken 10 years to get a man. I don't know. Who knows? Maybe it was meant to take this long because I had to be in that right place to rewrite it in the right way. I always envisioned this as a low budget film. As someone who has produced a lot of my own work, writing with budget in mind is something that I always do. If anything, in recent years, I've started to write bigger budget things because I want to make bigger budget things. I want to move past. Not that I don't love low budget films. Like, I love nothing but an indie film where I can watch it and I can see the tough choices the producers had to make that movie work with a limited amount of money. But to me, it was always a movie that could be done on a lower budget because I was going to produce this myself and I don't have a trust fund. I always saw this as a story with just three characters, one location. Not having any technology was also another way to get around, having to have other elements to it. It's like, I don't need to think about a TV in the background and what that broadcast would be like, because there's no TV, because they don't really have electricity. They're living out in the woods. One location, you can shoot it faster that way. I purposely wrote a lot of it in the daytime because you don't need as many lights. Even in my other films, I feel like that's a skill that has helped me. Just thinking of like, I could make this change and it would cost less. Every writer, I think when we sit down to write, we are already dreaming of what will this be like, right? Like, who can play these characters? What would it be like when this is a movie that I can invite people to come see? So every time that you get close to that step, right, that you meet someone and they read your work and they go, yes, this would make a great film. Let's get it made. And here are some casting choices. You start to research your own casting choices. I love working with development execs and producers because I always bring my own thing of like, hey, I'm a fan of this person. Can we get them? I have my wish lists of actors that I would love to work with. And luckily, I actually got someone on my wish list to then be in my movie for the version that became a movie. But I think every time that you get to that point where there's no movement forward or people have passed or they couldn't get the financing together, it does feel like a loss because it is a loss. You're like secretly writing your Oscar acceptance speech in your head and just daydreaming about what this movie will be like in the big screen. And then you basically get told, nope, it's over now. It's not going to happen. And you're back to square one and you feel like, I put so much time and effort and months and months and months of work into this. I got my hopes up. I was starting to feel like, hey, maybe I'm a real writer because people want to produce my work. Maybe I am good enough. And then you go to this place of like, no, I'm terrible. They finally came to their senses and realized that I'm no good. But I think there's an intellectual part that knows that that's not true. But there is definitely another part of your brain that goes, yeah, that just proves that I'm not good enough and I'll never be good enough and I should just give up. I think the thing that keeps me going when I get to those places is I always kind of write something new. I think maybe one of the times where this script didn't go, I wrote another script of mine, Occupants, that then became a movie. But I was in a place of like frustration and anger, and it became one of the characters in the film. And I'm like, I know I was coming from a place of feeling like I had stalled in my career. And I use that feeling. And I think I do that now all the time. I end up digging deep into whatever that feeling is, and it fuels my next idea. And I feel like throughout the years, I've been able to teach myself to do that, to get as down and depressed as I can because, oh, it fell apart. It's not going to move forward. And just channel that, all those negative feelings into more work. And I think that's how I keep going. And I'm always itching to tell stories. I think that's the other thing that keeps me going too. Like at the end of the day, I tell myself, I'm like, so what if nobody ever sees it? Just write it. Just write it. Nobody has to see it. Just do it for you because it's fun to sit down at your computer and write it. just spend time with these characters, just enjoy it. And I think when it's just you and the story, sometimes it's the most enjoyable before you have to show it to people and they tell you everything that's wrong with it and everything that you have to change. So I do cherish that time when it's just me and the story and I can just have fun and play. It feels like being a kid again. And I'm like playing with my dolls in my bedroom as a child. In 2021, I wrote the draft that I had been thinking about writing for a while. And I had even like showed the script around to a couple of people. And then I got to a point where I just had to commit, right? I'm like, this is how I see this character. Now I have to commit. And I just have to do this rewrite because at that point I was itching to get it made. So I did that in 2021. I finally turned the father into a mother officially. I felt like everything clicked, but I did put that draft aside for a while. I was starting to think about like, what do I do next? All right, great. I want to produce this movie. How am I going to do this next? I have no idea. A producer's role is to make the film a reality. There are different types of producers, right? There's creative producers, there's executive producers, but definitely a producer is someone who's in charge of all aspects of the film, right? From hiring the crew to overseeing post-production to casting, all those things. My lead actress, Bianca Santos, I knew her from another project that has been developed, but didn't move forward. She had been attached to the other project. I, you know, had a great relationship with her from talking and developing work. And like, I know what she can do. I kind of wanted her to be in the movie way before I even told her about it. So after I did this rewrite, the next step was I'm like, all right, now I need to see if Bianca wants to do it. And I felt like to me, if she said no, it was definitely just going to go back into my drawer and I was going to focus on something else because I definitely couldn't imagine bringing anyone else on board. Bianca's a fantastic actress. She's done a lot of television. She's done a lot of films. She was in The Duff. She was in Ouija. She was in a bunch of things. But one of the things that we had talked about in the other project that we had together was of her coming on board to projects and being a producer. It was not only like, hey, will you please star in my movie? But it was also, will you come be my partner and help me produce this? Honestly, I felt like if she had said no, I was probably going to put the script aside and go do something else because I really didn't think I could do it without her. Luckily, she said yes. And it honestly took me a while to just work up the courage to even ask her. I'm like, all right, I don't know how to ask. It's a big ask. It's like, will you star and produce my movie with me, please? And I think everything clicked after that. I introduced her to Oliver Rayon, who's her co-star. He's the guy that comes and disrupts the mother-daughter idyllic life out in the woods. And I introduced them when we had a really quick meeting in LA where they kind of got to know each other. Because I also wanted to see, I'm like, are they going to jive? Are they going to have a, you know, chemistry? Do they even like each other as people, you know, let alone like, are we all going to get along to get this movie made? Because I knew it was going to be challenging. Oliver had starred in my other film, In Transit, which I did a couple of years back. I know what he can do and I love his work. And I knew that like, hey, if I ask him, he will 100% say yes. And he did. Luckily, I was not wrong. He's already produced stuff, so I also wanted him as a producer. Kind of had our team, right? What do we do next? Now we need to find the mother. Oliver took the reins on that. He put up a casting notice on Breakdown Services, and we watched a bunch of auditions, and then we came across Jacqueline Fleming's audition. She rocked it. It's one of those things that I still have it. I was actually cleaning a bunch of files on my computer and I found her audition and I watched it again. And I'm like, wow, that's an amazing tape. Like, I feel like she should teach courses on how to self-tape because I have never seen someone rock a self-tape to that level where like she lived that character. She looked really good, kind of dressed the part too. It was amazing. It was one of those things where I'm like, I can't imagine anyone else doing this role but her. So then I have my cast. I have my producing partners. I've attached myself as director. And then the next part was like, now we need to find the money to do this. And, you know, we need locations, like we need all those other practical things. So then we decided to crowdfund for some of it. So we threw together a crowdfunding campaign that was actually going to end just in time for us to like get that money and then go to set. The deeper we got into just prepping for the crowdfunding and putting together the budget and everything, we started to realize that we're going to need more funding. And we had been just hitting up everyone we knew. So then when Jacqueline came on board, it was one of those things that she has a production company too. She's also a producer and a director. And she had access to some financing that were then perfect. Okay, so we're going to crowdfund for a portion of it. Jacqueline brought another portion of the financing together and we wrapped the crowdfunding campaign. And 3 weeks later, we were basically on set shooting the film. So we had set our goal to 20,000, even though we all knew that we were going to need more than that. As we were starting to crowdfund, it crowdfunded with Seed and Spark, which is a great company for crowdfunding. They guide you through the process. You know, there's a lot of that they do to make sure that you understand how much work goes into crowdfunding, all of your perks and how to reach out to people, how to ask. So the reason why I think at one point I wanted to set the goal a little bit higher because of Bree Castellini from Seed and Spark, we lowered the goal knowing that we would still need to raise more money to be able to go into production. And also knowing that we were going to need to raise more money to get into post-production, you know, because you only have a month. They kind of look at your contacts and how many people you're going to reach out to. And they give you what they think realistically that you can raise in a month. And we're very thankful for that. And you have to get to 80% of your goal to even take any of the money out. We set our goal to 20,000 because we felt like that's the amount that we can raise. A lot of it was like, let's have faith that it's all going to pull through. So as we were crowdfunding, we were also reaching out to our network of people to see if we could get other investors. And, you know, we were fortunate enough that Jacqueline was able to bring her investors in. But it was nerve-wracking because there was a moment where we're like, you know, what if we don't make it to our goal? And then it became like, what if we make it to the goal, but we still don't have enough to go into production? We were even at one point hoping to crowdfund again for post. Ended up, you know, pinching more pennies and just going about it and putting a lot of our own resources into it just to make post-production happen, because crowdfunding is like a full-time job on top of all your other responsibilities. And it is nerve-wracking. And it's also very vulnerable. It's reaching out to everyone you know and asking them for money in this like very vulnerable way, right? And then sharing the project and hoping that they feel like this is a project that's worthy of them putting their personal hard-earned money into it. All of it is very, very hard. It's like, that's why creating a pitch video is very important. All the things that I feel like Seed and Spark is so good at guiding you through, like they have so many resources that I feel like anyone that wants to crowdfund, just go through their website. And you will see, they also do a lot of like trainings and events that you can participate, you know, post-COVID, everything's online. So they do a lot of different things, a lot of webinars that people can join and watch and learn about the process. So yeah, it all came together, but there were so many moments where I'm like, I don't know, at any moment now, it could all fall apart. But we did it. We made it as far as we did. And it got to a point once we got through production, what really became like, we're just going to take this one step at a time. We need this to get done. Let me find an editor that can work with our limited budget and get paid in installments. And, you know, someone who's passionate to work on the project, who will work with me and my limited resources at that point. I've been fortunate to find some very loving, understanding artists that wanted to come on board and help us out. So many adventures happened between us shooting this film and now post-production and everything. But it was one of those things that basically we had to set a date, right? We're like, all right, we're going to do this in April. and we had the dates and we basically had to make it happen. Bianca was actually the one that found the location, which so many people have said it's gorgeous. It is gorgeous. It's this private property in Thousand Oaks is where we shot our woods and our cabin. And she found it through great producing work. I told her, I'm like, I have good instincts about people. I knew you would make an amazing producer. She has not disappointed me yet. We all got like so many favors, right? I feel like at this point, everyone in our lives knows that we made this movie and everyone has pitched in some way, shape or form. Either financially through our crowdfunding or come on set and help us out. Like Bianca's best friends were on set helping us. Bianca's brother was our PA. I know one of Oliver's friends helped us just shoot some additional footage that we needed for the film. So it's definitely been like beg, borrow, and steal to get this movie made. But it's been like a labor of love for all of us where we put so much of our own resources and our own energy just to get it made. Once we had it shot, I had to go into post-production. I found a great editor and she did a lot of work. And then it got to a point where like, okay, I'll take it from here. So I then sat down and did a few passes of recutting the film myself. That's where my film school expertise come to play. I actually did a lot of the post-production work myself too. Like I did a lot of the editing. I created all the titles. So yeah, even that, it's like there's not an inch of this film where I didn't pour my entire soul into it. I even had my husband, he did a bunch of color correction on the film. I did some, we took turns. It got to see, I did mention that he doesn't read my writing anymore, but he will color correct my film now. So it's like, it's a give and take. And then, you know, finding music and the sound mix, it's like, I don't know anything about music or mixing sound. So I didn't do any of that, but I was able to kind of teach myself how to color correct. I think what helps me too is that I love filmmaking. There's not an aspect of filmmaking that I don't find fascinating. So to me, I'm like, yeah, put me in an editing room for like 20 hours a day and I will be overjoyed with the work. Like I love all aspects of it. It is also what saved us too, because, you know, on the low budget, we definitely had to pinch all the pennies we could pinch. So once it gets to a place where like, we still need to do some edits, it's like, all right, I'm the person to do it. Being a writer and a producer and a director definitely helps. I feel like the more you understand what the director does, it makes you a better writer. And I know for me, it was on my very first film, which is a film called Area Q. I was able to stay for all the filming. I got to sit next to the director and basically watch him work all day. And I remember the DP telling me, like, you're the first writer I've seen who's not bored to tears on set. And I know, I'm like, I love it. Yeah, give it to me. I want to watch how the sausage gets made every day, all the time. I love being on a film set. I love seeing everybody do their work. I feel like I learn a lot from watching how directors direct. But I think you also learn a lot of the craft of screenwriting when you then take those words to a set. And now you have to make it into a movie. And as a director, to understand what's important about the story, because then you can cut things that you feel like this is not as important because I know the story, because I wrote the story. And I definitely had to make those decisions on set where I'm like, all right, if I have to cut something, it's going to be this, because I know if I take this out, the story still makes sense. To me, I'm like, I definitely know those writers were like, nope, I've done my job. I want to go home now and call me for the premiere. I don't want to be involved. But I love to collaborate with actors. I also feel like actors have great instincts when it comes to dialogue. I let them play a lot. I am not too, you know, precious about the dialogue that I wrote or the scene. I feel like if the scene is not working and the actor's like, can we do it this way? Like 99.9% of the time, I let them do it their way because I always trust them to give it their all and to have good instincts when it comes to story. And I think what we don't think about is the amount of time that actors actually spend with the writing right? And they do all their work to prep to get into that character, that sometimes they do see something that you maybe didn't see because they've been living with that character for so long and with the story overall. And they do that, like, you know, to self-tape, as I mentioned, that Jacqueline's self-tape was amazing. To self-tape, it's like they study the scene, they know the scene. So I always feel like actors have amazing storytelling instincts. When my actors stepped in as producers, they did a lot of the pre-production work. Once we were on set, most of the time, took the producer hat off and were able to just act. But there were moments where they had to put the producer hat on. And for me, like, I never got to take the producer hat off. Part of me is like, I wish I could now take the producer hat off, but I cannot. All of my actors are producers, and they all bring their own vision, their own expertise. It does feel sometimes overwhelming to have all those voices in the room. It's like, there's four producers on this film, and we all have had other jobs, right? Like, none of us are just a producer. It's like, we all have a lot of skin in the game in that sense. I have nothing but praise to say to all three of them. They're amazing performers. They're all talented producers. We got to pinch those pennies somehow. And it ends up being that, you know, we have to put in our own resources into the film. And it gets tough. It gets tough to wear that many hats, right? And to have, I think, as close of a relationship as we've all had. We were all staying in a hotel that was like really close to the set. It definitely was a little bit of like a slumber party at times, or like, oh, let's all hang out at the hot tub. I love having that close of a relationship with my, you know, my business partners. But yeah, there are conflicts for sure. Conflicts will arise. I've learned a lot about conflict resolution maybe throughout this film, and maybe I have more to learn from it. Maybe that's the bigger lesson too that I need to get, is just listening to everyone and making sure that we're all on the same page, taking a breath sometimes. Was it easy? No, it was not. Was it worth it? Oh, yes, it was. So we got into the Pan African Film Festival. That was our world premiere. It was back in February. It was on Valentine's Day, actually. Jacqueline Fleming, the multi-talented actress, producer, she had worked with our sales agent before. She had actually had one of her films distributed by Gravitas. She brought that resource to us. Jeffrey Cooper is the one that negotiated the deal with Gravitas. That's how that became a reality. Now we have just signed the distribution deal. We are probably going to be streaming in August of 2023. There should be an official announcement in the trades sometime soon. And we're still negotiating international territories at this point. My advice to aspiring writers is make a short film if you can, because anytime that you actually take your words that you wrote on a piece of paper and turn those into a movie, you learn so much about what works and what doesn't. A lot of the things that I feel like I nag my students about, like, what does the camera see? And you can't put that they're thinking something because we're not going to see that. Once you're actually on set and you're trying to put those images together, you will realize really quickly that, like, yeah, you can't do that. You can't rely on what the person is feeling unless we, the audience, will see the actor doing something to tell us that they're feeling that way. I think for that, if you, you know, write a scene and shoot it, find actors and go off and shoot it and see what it takes to just put a project together. And also, it's a lot easier for people to watch a proof of concept or a short film that's maybe 5 minutes long than sitting down and reading a whole script. Go shoot some stuff, go experiment, and you could have a calling card to show, you know. If anything, it's just a conversation piece, right? That you end up in a meeting and you can tell a producer that you made the short film. And they're like, oh, great. I would love to see it. Make a movie.
The Right Process is hosted and curated by me, Charlie Jensen. This season was produced by Jamie Moss. The Writers Program offers courses, certificates, and services that help writers achieve their writing goals one page at a time. For more information, visit writers.uclaextension.edu.